Here's a quote for you. Politics is the art of looking for trouble, finding it everywhere, diagnosing it incorrectly, and applying the wrong remedies. Today on Homefront, we discuss the tragedy of errors made by our national government. If we didn't know better, the policies implemented appear to have these goals: ruin the economy, hurt the innocent, trash our family values, and destroy our privacy, our autonomy, and our way of life. We can either give them the benefit of the doubt or see that the Green Movement is really the Red Movement. There are some who are using the iron fist of environmental measures to promote a communistic way of life for our country, where the land is owned by the government and our freedom is gone. So what can be done? The first step is to be informed. Our guest today produced a documentary to help educate us as to what our government is doing to turn us back into a third world country. It's time for Better Ideas, and this show will help you learn what is happening and what you can do about it. Welcome to Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host. As a writer, speaker, and former legislator, we discuss limiting government, fiscal responsibility, and fair taxation. I'm a mother of seven and a wife of one for over three decades, so I bring you my personal experience. And now it's time for Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Welcome to Homefront. I am so glad you could join us today. We have a spectacular guest, Jeff King. Jeff King comes to us from the beautiful state of Montana. He lives near the area around Yellowstone, and he is a movie producer of a movie called Blue. The point of the movie is it's promoting the problems caused by environmentalism, and the movement is called Blue Beats Green. So welcome, Jeff.
Hey, thanks, Cynthia. I appreciate being on your show today.
Well, we appreciate you, too. Anybody who can make a movie to enlighten America is definitely on the right track, because we need a little bit of help. Now, you come from a very rural part of Montana. What part of Montana is that?
Presently, it's been central Montana. I lived in outside of Billings for the last several years of my life, but most of my time in Montana was spent in the southwestern corner of the state in a very rural area known as the Big Hole Valley. It's right on the border of Idaho, down in the southwestern corner, and just the most beautiful place in the world.
What makes it so beautiful?
Just surrounded by mountains. That's where the valley got its name. It's called the Big Hole because you just feel like you're in this big hole. You're surrounded by these snow-capped peaks, the Bitterroot Mountains on the west side, the Pioneers on the east side, and it's just so remote and so unsettled. It's like a Jackson Hole, but it doesn't have the money of the tourists and everything else. It's sort of off the beaten path.
When you say it's near Yellowstone, most people in America of my vintage, all we remember of Yellowstone Park is what we got from watching Yogi Bear. What was it that made you aware of the problems caused by the environmental movement?
Well, growing up in the rural area of Montana gave me a look into all of the conflict and controversy that comes when the federal government controls the land. And that's where you see so much of the conflict today between the landowners and the citizens and then the government / special interest groups. In my case, what got me interested in this topic probably the most was the reintroduction of wolves to Yellowstone, and that happened literally right in my backyard. Big Hole Valley, as I mentioned, is where I grew up, and it was centrally located between Yellowstone Park, Glacier Park, and then central Idaho, which was another one of the reintroduction areas. So this happened in 1995 and 96, but it took it about, 10 years to get going and really start becoming a problem. And what I saw around me, even in, my dad's own cattle herd and our neighbors who had horses get ripped apart by wolves, and never lined up with what the government, the environmental groups were saying. You know, they denied what was actually happening before my very eyes, and before the eyes of my friends and everybody else that I knew. So the first film, I actually did a film on this. This is what inspired me to make a film, because the truth wasn't being told on this topic. And I bought a camera and I bought a mic, and I figured out how to make a documentary film. And I just traveled around and I interviewed people, and I said, hey, what's really going on? Here's what they're saying. What do you see? Is this true? Is this accurate? And the process of making that film, which is called Crying Wolf, Exposing the Wolf Reintroduction to Yellowstone National Park, opened my eyes to a whole myriad of other problems like this that were happening all across the West.
So, Jeff, tell us a little bit about your family then. Was your father a cattleman, and how did that come about that he was having his horses torn apart?
Well, as the neighbors, we did have a neighbor lose a foal as the mare was giving birth to it. Wolf came and just ate it right as she was giving birth to it. But yeah, my dad had a ranch in southwestern Montana, and we ran 400 Black Angus cows year-round out there.
So where did they get these wolves from that they were trying to introduce to the park?
They came from Canada. The wolves that were reintroduced, I would say were introduced, were non-native, more of a, say, purebred variety of gray wolf that came from Canada. I've heard it described as a timber wolf or a Rocky Mountain wolf. Irregardless, they're much smaller and much less efficient predators than the ones that came down from Canada. And that whole issue was just so convoluted. The Endangered Species Act was broken many times. The Congress actually said, no, you guys can't bring the wolves back. That didn't stop them. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, that is, they worked pretty much on their own with no authority. The states didn't want it to happen. Montana, Idaho, and Wyoming all passed resolution, memoriam. One passed a petition in the state governments. They said, we don't want the wolves. But that didn't stop them. They just did it anyways. They stole money out of the Pittman Robinson Fund, which is a fund of that sportsmen, that is a tax on, you know, guns and ammunition, all that sort of jazz. And they took $45 to $70 million out of that fund with no approval. I interviewed the guy who audited this back in 1996, I believe it was. But they stole the money basically from the sportsmen. They introduced this invasive species from Canada that has since wiped out, in some cases, well over 90% of wildlife populations that used to be there. The wildlife and the game have just been destroyed in western Montana, southern Montana, Yellowstone, central Idaho, northern Idaho, and parts of Wyoming, and now they're moving into Washington and Oregon and even California and Colorado and the Dakotas, and all of this was, there's thousands of wolves now and all over the place, but it's only supposed to be between 78 and 100 wolves inside of Yellowstone National Park. That's the agreement that they said they were going to follow, and they had no intention of doing that, as you can see today. But it was that whole wolf issue that got me going into documentary films and what led me into my production of my latest film, which is called Blue.
Okay, so I'd like to move on to Blue, but you've got me gripped by the wolf story. Who are these people who love wolves so much who are bringing them into Montana?
Yeah, like I said, Cynthia, this happened back in 1995 and 96 is when they brought them down from Canada into Yellowstone and central Idaho. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service was the agency that oversaw all of that, and they worked closely with Defenders of Wildlife and some other environmental groups. Some of the individuals actually for the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, as soon as this happened, a couple of years later, they step down from their position there and they go work for these environmental groups, you know, and they take the top jobs at those groups. So they're kind of one and the same. I see them, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and the environmental groups, they're made of the same people. They swap places every once in a while.
The Fish and Wildlife Service brought in the wolves. Have they apologized, or are they doing something to reduce their population?
No, and there is I think there is a very valid lawsuit because all of this can be proven on paper in black and white. Not only that they stole the money from the sportsmen illegally, but like everything else I said, the Endangered Species Act was not followed. None of the agreements were kept. They were all broken. And there's just no end in sight, and it's been one thing after the next. Many people's lives, ranchers with cattle and sheep, have been just hit extremely hard in certain areas, especially in western Montana, central Idaho, and parts of Wyoming. There's one case not far from where I lived where I think there's 120 sheep were killed in one night by a wolf and a couple of her pups. She was teaching them how to hunt or something. And they're very ruthless killers, and they're very, very, they kill for sport a lot. And so they usually don't eat what they kill. And they kill a lot, like I mentioned, 90%. The Yellowstone elk herd, the greater northern Yellowstone elk herd, was reduced from about 20,000 to down below 4,500. That number's probably even lower today because the fox are counting the chickens in the coop. But either way you slice it, it's 90% decrease from before the reintroduction to after the reintroduction of wolves to the area. And again, it was not a reintroduction. It was an introduction of a species that was much larger and a much more proficient predator than the Rocky Mountain or timber wolf that we used to have.
So how can a farmer protect himself?
Well, there's really not a lot you can do because you can't be watching over every single one of your cows out in the field, you know, sometimes in the woods. A rancher out of the big hole, you know, started losing 30 or 40% of his cows that were on the timber to wolves, so he had to quit doing it. And he relied on much of that land to be able to pay his bills every year with his cattle. So it's just hard to watch. You know, they would kill at night. They drag him into the woods. In some areas of the West, like Montana now, you can shoot a wolf that is in your cattle if you see it. We've opened up a hunting season and a trapping season on wolves, which have been very ineffective. You know, ever since the thing happened, actually, the federal government's been flying airplanes out across rural Montana and Wyoming and Idaho shooting wolves. In the Big Hole Valley alone, in 2009, I think it was 50 wolves. I think it was 49, 50 wolves were killed by the federal government. And you don't hear about this. I mean, it's all kind of under wraps. They don't really talk about that a whole lot. But actually, I think in Washington State, if you would even shoot a wolf that you saw in your cows or sheep right now, you would be fined a great deal. It was like that in Montana for a while. I mean, you would literally get in more trouble for shooting a wolf than you would another human being. It was pretty crazy back in the early days.
I live in a more urban area, but we've had chickens in our backyard. Occasionally a hawk would kill one of my chickens. And I called the Department of Conservation and asked what I could do to get rid of the hawks. And they said, well, you can't shoot it because there'll be more hawks coming behind it. It wouldn't solve the problem. So we pretty much left the hawks to get our chickens. And it really disappointed me because there should be a better way to keep things going the right direction. But this goes into the next question about the environmental posture that our government has taken. I'm a little older than you, and when I was growing up in the 60s and 70s in our public schools, we would have a lot of discussion on the problem of pollution. And indeed, pollution was a bigger factor back then. And because I predate you a little bit, let me just give you some background. We had a lot of industrialization with wanton disregard to air pollution or water pollution specifically. I remember even in my music class, we were singing songs about pollution and how bad it is. My mom and dad would go to take me to the family reunions up in Ohio. My grandparents had a cottage on the shore of Lake Erie. And at the time, the news was that Lake Erie was dead. And indeed, it was so bad that there were always dead fish laying on the shore. You may not believe this, but the clams would literally climb out of their shells and we'd step on them along the beach. My cousins and I would all get impetigo the week after we went swimming in Lake Erie. So that just tells you it really did have a lot of filth in it. But there were such great strides made that the lake is more beautiful today than ever. A lot of air quality is cleaned up, and this happened through much of it was private companies deciding to make changes. Some of it was the EPA, but where did you get involved with observing what the environmental movement is doing to America?
Well, my film focuses on three of the big pillars, I would say, of the green movement of environmentalism in our day. And fundamentally, first off, I mean, it's not a battle over the environment. It's not a fight over environmental sympathies. It's not us the capitalists, the freedom lovers, versus the environmentalists who are trying to save the environment. No. So it's about taking that back. Okay, I love the environment more than most environmentalists. That's what I would argue. And maybe I don't. Maybe we're pretty close. But the real fight is about truth. It's about freedom. It's about humanity. Because, like I said, we all want clean water. We all want clean air. But I want a freer, more flourishing world to live in for my spouse, for my children, for my grandchildren one day. But anyway, so the film focuses on three of the big myths, I would say, or the big arguments of the environmental movement. One of them is the myth that wealth and industry is a bad thing for the environment. And I argue that it's actually the best friend of environmental stewardship. We can talk more about that later. And then the second point that I make is that carbon dioxide is not a pollutant at all. It's actually a miracle gas. It's the number one limiting essential ingredient for plant growth. Since 1958, scientists I interviewed, who's a nuclear scientist, he's got PhDs in aerophysics and that sort of thing. Just a brilliant man, Robert Zubin from Colorado, was telling me that since we've been taking satellite photos of the Earth, and since 1958, what they show is that during this time, when the concentration of CO2 in the atmosphere did increase by quite a bit. Now, that's relative to quite a bit. I'll talk more about that later. But anyways, the rate of plant growth on Earth has increased by over 15%. And this is not agricultural plants. This is wildlands. This is jungles, forests, and grasslands. And then the film also touches on overpopulation and the myth of overpopulation and how people are not just consumers, but people are producers. And so the more of us, the more prosperity. And I also argue that prosperity is a net benefit for the environment. And it also touches on some of the conspiracy theories, like Agenda 21.
So one thing you said on your website that really intrigued me, you ask, is green merely a disguise for the new red? By red, are you referring to communism?
Yeah, collectivism. Socialism, fascism, communism, it's all kind of lumped into that same category of collectivism.
Hi, friends. Do you like what you're hearing? Then go to my website. It's CynthiaDavis.net and sign up for my newsletter. You'll get all this information and more when you sign up for my email reminding you of when you'll hear another podcast and letting you know what's coming up next. Besides, we always have a little bit of humor at the end, so go to CynthiaDavis.net and stay in the loop. For those of you who don't like email, go to my Facebook page. It's called Homefront with Cynthia Davis. And make sure you click the like button. That way, you'll have a convenient way to see what we're doing and to get the word when another podcast is released. That's Homefront with Cynthia Davis on Facebook. My website is CynthiaDavis.net. That's where we keep all our good stuff. So if you want to get our newsletter and find more podcasts, go to CynthiaDavis.net. Hey, let's stay in touch. My parents took me camping a lot when I was a child, and I'm one of those people who never really enjoyed the great outdoors like I should have. Part of it is because while some were focusing on the visual aesthetics, I was focusing on spiders and rocks under my sleeping bag and all the hardships of not having the comforts of home, not having a warm shower, and all the dirt we dealt with. I love all the improvements of modern civilization. When we'd go camping, I would be like, you know, mankind has worked for 6,000 years to improve ourselves, and here we are shaking our fist on modern comforts and denying ourselves the pleasure of electricity and the cleanliness and the joy of running water, and just kind of funny why we're now valuing getting back to nature. I was on the O'Fallon City Council, and I liked the idea of pavement It's much better driving over a paved road than a dirt road. I also viewed development as being a positive, and any elected official has got to see the enhanced tax revenue that comes from developed land versus undeveloped land. So even if you want to appeal to the greed of the elected officials, you can make a case that having modern improvements is beneficial. So explain to me how your movie that you produced about Blue shows that that is better also.
Yeah, well, historically, this is just the case. This is the way it always has been. When man has given freedom to invent and freedom to create in a free market society, we find solutions to our problems. The problems that come up, that arise, create their own solution. And one of the best examples of this, and this is in film, is the example of when we switched from whale oil to light bulbs. That's just one illustration. You know, there was a crisis. The whale population was dwindling. Whale oil became extremely high. And I have some photographs of whalers off the coast of California. A lot of people don't know that they actually existed, but we had whalers here in the United States off the coast of Cali in Humboldt County area, sort of in the northern part of the state. But even in, you know, at the turn of the century, in the 10s and 20s, that we were still on whale oil because the electricity hadn't moved all the way out into the remoter parts of the country yet. Who could argue that light bulbs weren't an improvement from whale oil? Not only did we save the whale population by switching to light bulbs, thanks to Thomas Edison's invention, but we also created a much more effective, more efficient way to generate light. And so that's one illustration. Another illustration that comes up in the film is just a look at how automobiles have increased in their cleanliness in the last 40 years. In 1970, Cynthia, if you had a 1970 Ford Mustang parked in your driveway, and then I drove my brand new 2014, 2015 Ford Mustang down the highway at 60 miles an hour, or any speed for that matter, guess which one, guess whose Mustang would be emitting more pollution? It actually would be yours. It's just fascinating, but because of improvements in the catalytic converter and other things inside the engine, improving the transfer of energy, your Mustang, your 1970, is polluting more than the one I'm driving down the highway. So the amount of pollution has been reduced dramatically in automobiles. And it's fascinating because the cars today don't emit hardly anything compared to, say, a wildfire. That's another story. But another illustration that comes up in the film is when we switch from horses to automobiles in places like New York City, where you had 100,000 horses packed in there, it was very, very dirty. You can imagine the amount of manure and urine, and there were dead horses everywhere. There's a photo in the film of these kids playing around this dead horse on the street. I think it was in New York. And it was dirty. And in fact, the public health authorities at the time said, you know what, this is a major health problem. We have to bring in automobiles to clean up the cities. And so the irony is the automobiles ended up being an environmental improvement, and they actually cleaned up the cities over the horses. And anybody who's been outside of the developed world, Cynthia, can tell you this with their own eyes. In places where they're worried about putting food on the table, clothes on the back, and a roof over their head, they really don't care about smog. They don't care about the chemicals in the stream or the feces floating down the river because they simply can't. They don't even notice it. It's only in places like the United States and other developed countries that have the prosperity and the standard of living high enough so they can say, I don't like that smog. I don't like the fact that there's trash in the stream. Let's clean it up. So development and the wealth that it brings with it the resources we need to improve the environment.
Keep things nice. You're right. So where did the name come from, Broken Hints Media?
Oh, that's just my LLC, my production company.
What are the broken hints?
Did you want the story on
Yes,
or?
Yes.
Some people ask me that, and I just basically thought it sounded cool. But back in the day, like we talked about before we were on the air, I was homeschooled. And I'm very thankful for the sacrifice that my mom and my dad made to to homeschool me. It allowed me to pursue what I wanted to pursue and learn what I wanted to learn. Of course, I had to get some of the essentials done in order to pass. But anyways, during those years of homeschool, I was very much a United States history, especially early history from Pilgrims to, say, Constitution, War for Independence era buff. And I really liked studying the Constitution and a lot of stuff that went on during that time period. There's a guy by the name of Joseph Hawley. Not many people have ever heard of him. He was sort of, I guess, a Paul Revere type of guy in the fact that he worked behind the scenes to rally people up against the British. He said, look, guys, I've seen the series of broken hints, he called them. The British have done basically X, Y, Z. He wrote a paper called Broken Hints to the Continental Congress and said, this is why we need to fight the British, because of these broken hints, he called them, that I've seen, that we've seen in the last, you know, preceding months and year. So that's where the name came from.
Do you have any interest in politics?
Oh, definitely. That's what this film is. This film is intended to do, is to change the political nature of the debate
mm-hmm.
when it comes to the environment. I'm actively looking for candidates to put blue on their platform. I've got a couple potential people right now on the radar, but because ultimately it's not just a film, but it is a movement, and I want blue to replace green because blue beats green.
There may be many candidates listening to our show today, so what advice do you have for them if they want to incorporate this into their platform, and how do they connect up with you?
Well, they can go to my website, bluebeatsgreen.com, and I have an email link on there. They can send me an email that goes right into my inbox, and I'd be happy to help them out more. There's also a page, Blue versus Green page, which provides some more information sort of on how the blue position thinks about things versus the green. And blue is an acronym. It's B-L-U-E. Blue stands, B stands for beautify, recognizing that it is our job to beautify the earth. That's one reason we were created. L is liberate. We recognize that it's through freedom and liberation, private property, free enterprise, that we can best achieve that goal. And that's not just for the environment, but that's also for our country and our economy and even national security. With a strong country, you have a strong national defense and security. And then U stands for utilize our resources. We need to utilize the resources that we have responsibly and wisely, but that's for our benefit and the benefit of the environment. And E is enjoy it. Who is not sick and tired of the alarmism that's going on today? The recent climate report from the federal government was just totally ridiculous. It's just being slammed up and down by all sorts of scientists who are not part of the establishment. John Coleman, co-founder of the Weather Channel, is just ripping into this report, and he calls it a litany of doom. That's what it is. From our fear-monger-in-chief, I think he said it. Dr. Roy Spencer, who's a climatologist and also a senior fellow policy advisor for the Cornwall Alliance for Stewardship of Creation, just rips into the report. Our lives are too short to freak out about things like this that don't matter because they're not simply true. And the reality, too, is, Cynthia, and you don't ever hear politicians with agendas talking about this, but we're living longer, healthier, happier lives on a cleaner planet than ever before in the history of the world. So E stands for enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. So let me ask you this. How can it benefit a candidate to put blue into his platform?
Well, it's a big idea. It's a big vision, and it's a proactive solution to a very real, very pressing problem. I think that the environmental movement is arguably more of a threat to freedom than was the communist of the Soviet Union, because it's more disguised. It's the same thing, but it's repackaged and it's rebranded as Green Save the Planet. And what blue does gives you a chance to not just react to what's going on. You're not just reacting constantly to the ever-increasing nonsense that's peddled by the other side. You're saying, hey, look, here's a proactive solution to the problem. We're going to embrace environmental stewardship. We're going to take that back, and it does not belong to the environmentalists. It does not belong to the bleeding heart liberals who push agendas through. or the control freaks, but hey, this is a value that we have too, and our method works and yours does not. So blue beats green.
Do you think we're headed to a time when the pendulum is going to swing back the other way?
Yeah, I think so. I think when this stuff first started, you know, to use a common analogy of the emperor not having any clothes, you know, this whole idea when it was really kick-started by Al Gore, even before then, when the seeds of environmentalist thought were being planted, especially by some different power brokers in Britain and other sorts of places. But the hysteria gained a lot of attention, but I think we didn't know it well enough. It was still too far away to tell. But now, after this recent climate report, in the last 6 months to a year and a half of them constantly being wrong in their forecasts with global warming, getting the CO2 science so messed up, we can see that from a much closer perspective that indeed the emperor is naked. that analogy is just that the emperor having no clothes is one that I think is so fitting here. It's just like, you know, there's nothing here. There's nothing substantial here, but the White House and the media and environmental groups just turn a blind eye to that.
Yeah, people tend to not be familiar enough with the facts and don't want to do their own research. So then we end up with what we've got. A lot of uninformed people who show up at the polls and vote for the status quo again and again, and not realizing that we're voting to sell ourselves down the river. So what is your next project you're going to be working on?
Well, it's getting this film out there.
Okay.
For the foreseeable future and the years ahead, I'm going to be marketing this film. Because it's an independent effort. It's going to be me trying to get my film in front of people to watch it, support it, and join the cause.
And what's the one parting thought you want people to leave this interview with when they think about what Jeff is doing in Montana? What is the one point you want to drive home?
Well, I want them to take personal responsibility, and we will win the battle when we engage the enemy, because we have the truth on our side. And so I don't want it to be just a J.D. King thing starting this blue movement. I'm looking for other people to join the cause and pick up that banner with me, because that's the message of my film, too. If decentralization works, centralization does not work. Why can we change the country through a simple idea like blue? Because that works. We don't need billions of dollars to change the world. We don't need the biggest organization in order to change the world. What we need is personal responsibility and a passion for freedom.
And your website one more time?
It's bluebeatsgreen.com.
Very good. Well, thank you for joining us, JD. You have been a pleasure and a delight, and I hope you'll be on our show again sometime. Are you willing to come back?
Hey, certainly, Cynthia. It was great talking to you.
And good luck with your film. Where is it going to be viewed? Is it going to ever be in theaters, or how are we distributing it?
Well, I am in the process of setting up some shows. I'm going to San Francisco and then possibly Sacramento at the end of this month, up into Oregon, and then from there, I've got some shows in Washington. I'm going to be in Spokane on the 31st of this month, and I'm going to be actually in Des Moines, Iowa on June 9th. And anyway, so I'm working on getting some showing set up. If you want to get a showing in your area, I'd be more than happy to work with you. Just get a hold of me. Again, you can do that through my website, bluebeatscreen.com, and just tell me that you want me to come out, and I'll be happy to help you get the word out in your area and travel out there and do a showing in your community.
Sounds good. Thanks, Jeff.
Yeah, thanks again, Cynthia.
This has been another edition of Homefront on Missouri Grassroots Radio. I'm Cynthia Davis and hope you enjoyed our program. Please join us next week when we offer another infusion of truth, honesty, and solutions that will grow people bigger and shrink government smaller. Thank you for joining us. See you next week.